Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Happy Monday. Way to go, Panthers. That was an awesome display. CMC himself. I'll get right into it. Blinken is talking. He's testifying. He went virtual. He didn't show up at the actual Congress. What they're doing is one of the stupid virtual Zoom hearing things where it gets all confusing because there's nobody in the room really other than the committee members and some of the other committee members who are just, you know, in other locations. And Blinken is over in the State Department, which is like, I don't know, like nine minutes away by walking. He could have showed up. He just decided he wasn't going to show up. And so he's going virtual. And don't expect any truth to come out of this. Do not expect anything to be learned. Nothing will be learned as a result of these hearings. But something very important should be learned. And I put this out on Twitter and my Facebook page earlier today. There is one overriding, super important lesson that we should all carry with us, especially now in the wake of 20 years since September the 11th, the attacks on American soil. Perpetrated by hijackers. Majority were Saudi. We now know there was collusion on some level, as being confirmed by documents that are being declassified, between members of the Saudi government and the hijackers. We already knew that, though. There's nothing really new there. But we also have to understand that on the 20th anniversary and on the two-week anniversary of us cutting and running from Afghanistan, leaving $85 billion in weaponry to the savage, despicable, evil, vile individuals known as the Taliban and the Haqqani Network, there's an important lesson you should learn, and it is vitally important that you learn it now. There is no accountability in government. None. Zero. If a corporation had gone into Afghanistan and had mismanaged things this badly, the board would be fired. The CEO would be fired and would likely be investigated, maybe brought up on criminal charges. Not the case when it comes to the government. I want you to go back to September 11th in your mind's eye. If you're too young to remember it, I'll help be your guide. Go back to September the 11th and think about the way you felt if you were old enough to really fully understand what was going on September the 11th and how it was you felt on September the 12th. This weird narrative has been spun by the political class, George W. Bush, Joseph W. Biden, Barack W. Obama, Bill W. Clinton, you know, all the members of the presidential club. This narrative has developed that it was about unity. We were so unified on September the 12th. We were so unified. You know what it took to get us unified? The incineration of 3,000 people in New York at the Pentagon in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That's what it took to get us unified, because I remember full well, and many of you do if you're old enough to recall the election in 2000, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were Hitler. They stole the election. They were illegitimate. Hillary Clinton stood on the floor of the United States Senate with a copy of the New York Daily News and the New York Post, and she asked the question, what did they know and when did they know it? There was the narrative of made it happen on purpose and let it happen on purpose and was it for Halliburton and all that sort of stuff. There was no unity going into September the 11th. None. Zero. Bush was illegit. He stole the election. All that narrative. They tried to block the certifications. All the same stuff that happened on January 6th. You have something that is a fiction. There's a fiction that's been created around September the 11th. The fiction is that we're so unified afterwards. We were so unified. Oh, my gosh. Really? If you're old enough to remember the time after those days, you're old enough to remember what happened when the Republicans went to go pay their respects in Minnesota because Paul Wellstone was killed in a plane crash. And you'll remember the way they were howled at and threatened and called vicious killers and all that kind of stuff from the assembled mob in Minneapolis. There was no unity. By about the 25th of September, people were saying, why isn't George Bush hitting them back yet? Why isn't it happening? We would eventually go in on October the 7th. And at the core of all of this, whether it's the cut and run decision by the Biden team, the Biden-Blinken-Harris team, the Biden-Blinken-Harris-Jarrett-Rice team, the common denominator between the event of September the 11th and this thing that just happened in Afghanistan is this. Nobody got fired. Nobody was fired for the failings that took place on September 11th. Nobody lost their job. One person resigned, Richard Clark. Richard Clark, he said, I'm kind of responsible because I blew it and I should have been better at warning people and the system failed. And so I'm resigning. I'm offering my resignation. That's all you got out of that. You got nobody fired. Nobody got fired. Not anybody at the security, at the checkpoints, at the airports that allowed these guys to bring box cutters on the plane. You know why? Because it wasn't illegal to bring a box cutter on an airplane then. None of them got fired. None of the intelligence community got fired. Nobody in the State Department got fired. Nobody in any portion of any of this got fired. In fact, better than getting fired, Jamie Gorelick's wall was still intact as an effort to confuse and to conceal Bill Clinton and Al Gore's Chinese money laundering scheme to get reelected in 1996. And as the investigators got closer and closer to look into that, Jamie Gorelick, an associate attorney general, a devotee of the Clintons and somebody who worked under Janet El Reno, she put up a wall so that the CIA and the FBI couldn't talk to each other. Jamie Gorelick would eventually go to a very powerful law firm in Washington, D.C. called Wilmer Hale. She would be at that law firm. And you know what she would be in charge of? Defending Guantanamo Bay and Al-Qaeda detainees. She was one of the superpowered lawyers who went and defended those people that were instrumental in the spread of jihad around the world and attacking us on our soil. Jamie Gorelick erected the wall that made us less safe, that brought about 9/11 for all intents and purposes. And she skates out of there. Unresponsible, irresponsible, not looked at, not pointed at. And she goes and becomes a defense attorney for the very people that were trying to kill us all. Nobody got fired after September the 11th, and nobody's going to be fired, and nobody's going to resign in the wake of what just happened in Afghanistan, despite the fact that there's probably a couple thousand Americans still stranded in the country. Tony Blinken won't resign. Lloyd Austin won't resign. Kamala Harris won't resign. Joe Biden won't resign. Why? Because this is how the game is played. So all of this going on right now with Tony Blinken's testimony is for show, because it's about the dough.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show, bringing you onto the program for a segment that takes two Bretts. Brett Jensen, Breaking Brett Jensen on Twitter at Brett_Jensen. I understand you've been paying a little bit of attention to government affairs, so to speak, Brett Jensen. What is the latest? What are you bringing to the people?
Nice joining you, Brett. Well, let's see. This morning at 10 a.m., we had a press conference, and basically it was a press conference with the city council member who's the head of the redistricting committee, Malcolm Graham. And so what this means is for our listeners, because, you know, the new census data, the last time they redrew the lines was in 2010, and we had to wait a year because of the COVID, and everything got pushed back. Usually we're doing this in March in time for the election, but now that's why the election has been pushed back until next year, next spring. And so they're going to redraw the lines. And so they had a consultant, the city attorney, and the head of the redistricting committee. And so basically what they said was, I asked a couple of questions. Tarek Bakary, city council member, and Braxton Winston would each like an extra district added. You know, Tarek Bakary said, hey, we can take away one of the at-large selections and just have 8 districts and 3 at-large. And Braxton said, well, why don't we keep the 4 at-large and add an extra district? That way you've got 12 instead of 11. And so, but they said, look, they said that's not going to happen unless the mayor and the city council specifically says and charges them with that duty. Because as of right now, it's going to stay at 11, so there won't be any extra districts.
Okay. How many Republicans you got right now?
2.
How many you going to end up with on the other side of this?
That's the million-dollar question. they will, and I asked that very question. I said, look, how are you going to determine how the lines are drawn? Like, when you're doing this, is it going to be based on, because it's supposed to be like all districts are even in population, like 125,000 or so in population is what they want each district. They said one district won't even be touched. And that's Councilmember Ed Driggs, who is one of the 2 Republicans. Said his is already good. It's at exactly at the number that you need it to be at. Nothing will be touched. And that will basically stay Republican. Okay. The other one they said is going to be District 6 with Tarek Bakary.
Wow.
And that's sort of like the South Park area that they said is going to be impacted by this. And they said it's looking like it's going to be a toss-up on whether or not it's going to be Democrat or Republican or a 50-50 split.
Okay, so it's you're going to end up killing off a Republican spot. I mean,
potentially.
Right, because you've got the majority the way you've got the majority, and you've got the power set up the way it's set up. So, I mean, that's, you know, I guess that they're going to want to sugarcoat this, but I'm guessing that we're going to go down one Republican rather than going down a Democrat in Charlotte, right?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the absolute worst, there will be one less Republican. So there'll be 8 Democrats and 1 Republican. You know, at best, it would just stay 2 Republicans. They're not going to gain an extra seat. It's not going to go
right. All
of a sudden 8-3. It'll be 9-2 or 10-1 is how it's going to play out. And I just want the listeners to imagine this real quick. And they can impact this. They will determine on how to draw the lines. And so imagine a circle. Imagine a clock.
Yep.
And let's say from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock, that first 15 minutes is all Republican. Mm-hmm. And then the next 15 minutes is all Democrat. Mm-hmm. If they decide to take the Republican section and put it in a Democrat section that's 90% Democrat, where the Republicans have no impact on the vote.
Right.
Now you just took away a lot of the Republicans that get Tarek Bakary elected, and they've left all the Democrats in Tarek Bakary's district, and that's where he could lose it. And so that's the million-dollar question. Like, are they going to specifically try and target and remove Republicans, or are they going to try and remove 50-50, or specifically remove Democrats? That's the big question.
That's incredible. Is there any remedy at the state level that could possibly be utilized there, Brett Jensen, if this doesn't go the way that maybe people would want it?
No, I mean, basically not. But what I said was, I asked the question, I said, what demographics are you looking at? Are you going to make these decisions based on race and gender and age and party affiliation? Like, how are we doing this? And the consultant who was in charge of this basically said, and he's from a law firm, Parker Poe. As a matter of fact, it's the same person that did the mediation between the county and CMS for the funding. He said, here's what we do. He goes, we will look strictly, top priority is the population, because we got to get each population the same. And then we'll look at party affiliation and then race. Uh-huh. And that's how they will also determine what's looked at. And I went, okay. That's gonna, if things change drastically in District 6 under Tark Bakhari, that's gonna be a major problem for the Republicans.
Huge problem. It's gonna be a massive problem. Absolutely.
I mean, you already, Brett, you already have zero Republicans on county commissioners. You have two Republicans on the school board and only two Republicans on the city council. And now you're in danger, be honest with you, with the redistricting of the lines, redrawing of the lines, you're in danger of losing one school board member, and now you're in danger of losing a city council member.
It's just great. The remedy will just clearly be everybody just register Democrat and then just go put people in. No, I know it's awful because I know what it's like to live under one party rule, and it's a dictatorship is what it essentially is, and it's brutal. But this is the game of politics. Brett Jensen, thank you so much for coming by, my friend. I look forward to our next visit.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show. We are watching a lot of different stories all happening at the same time, including, of course, as I mentioned earlier, the testimony by Tony Blinken at the congressional committee hearing, the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And here's what's happening. Essentially, the narrative that is forming here is not, hey, why did we bail out on Afghanistan? Why did we do it this way? Why do we leave people behind? It's, isn't it true that Donald Trump cut a deal with the Taliban to draw down American forces? Isn't it true January 6th is coming up here before, you know, the protest is coming up here? Isn't it true that... If I see one more pundit or American Politico come out and equate what happened on January 6th to 9/11, I'm going to just lose my mind, because that's the narrative that you got over the weekend. I can't even imagine it, but that's the way some people think. They think that what happened at the Capitol on January the 6th is on par with the devastation of September the 11th. It's on par with the Pentagon being suicide bombed, essentially, with a jet. The two towers getting hit by the jets. And Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where you had passengers take over and attempt to thwart an attack on America. So that is on par. That is on par. So who's Todd Beamer? Who is Todd Beamer in the January 6th scenario? Is it AOC, or would it be Nancy Pelosi? Who's Todd Beamer? Who's the let's roll? Who is that person? See, it's an inapt comparison. And unfortunately, when you look at the chattering class in Washington and New York and L.A., they have a limited bit of bandwidth within them to comment in an authentic way. Everything must be something else. I've told you this 100 times. Bush is Hitler. Reagan was Hitler. Cheney is Hitler. Rumsfeld is Hitler. Karl Rove is Hitler. Donald Trump is Hitler. Mike Pence is Hitler. It's just everybody's Hitler. You cheapen the brutality of Adolf Hitler's crimes by comparing everybody to Hitler. And so this is where we are. This is where we are. Let me give you a cut here real quick. This is cut 18. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin was talking with Andrea Mitchell from NBC News. And the question that came around from Mitchell to Lloyd, you good with that? Okay, Lloyd Austin was, well, how do you feel, Secretary of Defense Austin, now that the Taliban is back in charge? Are you bothered by this? Are you troubled by this? Go.
Well, it's troubling. It as you look at their lineup thus far, it looks like the same folks that we saw before. I would point to the fact that they are cooperating with us in terms of our efforts to get our American citizens out of country. But I would not, from that infer anything for the future. I would say that they're cooperating with us on this narrow set of issues, and we'll take it for what it is.
Okay, but at the same time, you have to understand that the Taliban is going to the United Nations, and the United Nations is lobbying for the Taliban to get $600 million in funding from the international community. We're treating them, and there's only one country that has the ability to confer legitimacy on them, and that's the United States of America, because, you know, we're the only game in town. We are conferring legitimacy on these people. The United Nations wants $600 million in donations for Taliban-ruled Afghanistan. They opened high-level donors conference Monday with a call for the world to send $600 million to help the Taliban's self-declared Islamic Caliphate of Afghanistan over the next 3 months. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is leading the globalist body's call for the funds in what amounts to a public relations victory for the terrorist group. Guterres, recent developments have increased the vulnerability of Afghans who have already been facing decades of deprivation and violence. The veteran Portuguese socialist also stressed a severe drought is jeopardizing the upcoming harvest and hunger has been rising. So when he says the world needs to send $606 million, what he means is Y-O-U spells you. You, the American people, the great American sucker class. We're supposed to be the ones who pony up the money. I mean, you're so wealthy. Everybody's just got it going on. It's just so good and awesome. And America's got all that money. And, you know, just send the money. It's for the children. It's not for the children. It's going to go to buy more weapons and to murder more people. You have to give them credit for the brazenness of the request. Hey, we know we just left $85 billion worth of hardware, and we know we did a couple of other things. Could you guys also write a check for $600 million, sort of just to tide them over to the next payday from the opium crops? Disgusting.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
So coming up in the next hour, we're going to be visited by a friend of mine named Seton Motley. Seton Motley, he was the guy who wrote the piece last week. On Friday, we were talking about this, that the Biden administration wants to bring back the old subprime mortgage loans that cratered the economy back in 2008. You know, everything comes back around eventually. It really is. It's incredible. You think like, well, that'll never happen again. Well, no, now it is happening again. And it's going to come back around. And they're trying to do it with the student loans as well. Additionally, you heard this mentioned in the update from Mark Garrison, Union County Public Schools, coming out, vote to do away with the COVID-19 contact tracing, 7,000 students and staff currently in quarantine who didn't test positive and aren't showing symptoms can return to school. That was a decision earlier today. No doubt, I can only imagine what the millennial marauders, the super woke millennial marauders who are present in a couple of the local media outlets, they may very well just go down there and organize some kind of a march of the mopey march, where they'll just stand there and scowl at you. I love when people decide, well, we need to create the rules. Here, I'll give you a great example here. One of those millennials that I speak of, but I'm not gonna name names because I don't want to make people more famous. This is a big outlet. This individual posted a tweet. Currently, there's no evidence of COVID-19 cases directly linked to the football games at Bank of America Stadium over the holiday weekend, Mecklenburg County's top health official tells us. That's like good news, isn't it? Is that not like good? Wouldn't that be good news? And oh, by the way, while we're at it, let's see. Who was playing? Clemson versus Georgia. Okay, so there may be people over out there, but it may not be Mecklenburg people. And the people that went to the game may not have been from Mecklenburg. They might have been from other counties. But you know what? You guys can't even take good news and run with it. Maybe those people were vaccinated. Oh, we don't have any evidence yet. This happened after Lollapalooza. People were freaking out about Lollapalooza in Chicago, about a month ago. And they were saying, oh, this is a super spreader event, man. It's going to be a super spreader event. And then, like a week later, they're going, We're not really seeing any evidence of a super spreader event in the city of Chicago. Could it be that the people that went to Lollapalooza came to Chicago from other... No, it would only be locals only, just like Vans. Locals only, man. I love the myopia. The myopia that people have. It makes me laugh because you're so centered on well, there's no evidence so far. Okay, are you hoping for evidence? Are you hoping that you may have something you can do with that? That's it. No more games. Why? Be careful whose windows you're looking into, by the way. I don't anticipate that anybody in this audience would be a peeping Tom or a peeping Tim or a peeping Tootie or any of that kind of stuff. I want to be like, you know, completely hemispherically correct here. Suspected peeping Tom shot and killed by female homeowner. This would be in the state of Texas. This report moving yesterday. So here's what happened. About 11:15 at night, and there is a lady, and she's getting, I guess, dressed for bed or had gotten up to get a drink or something like that. This would have been Friday night. I'm sorry, Friday night. This was reported yesterday. 11:15 p.m., just north of downtown in Houston, according to Houston police. They arrived at the home and found a man dead in the driveway of the home. Police say the man was looking into a bedroom window from outside, and the woman inside got scared and grabbed a rifle. She shot several times at the suspect through the wall of the home. Police say the man was shot one time and died at the scene. The homeowner is cooperating with the police. Now, I would never endorse that kind of behavior because you have to understand that there's got to be an equivalency between the punishment and the crime. And looking in a window, is that a death penalty case? It might be a case for a beating or something, but you know, shooting somebody. And again, I hate to be the guy that has to bring this up, but I will. The idea of shooting through the wall of your home, that's not good because that bullet is going to hit something. And we were talking about last week, you can't just fire into a dwelling. You also really shouldn't fire from inside a dwelling into the outside because, again, always look to where that round may go. It's going to hit what you're shooting at, and it may hit what's behind what you're shooting at, depending on how things go. That being said, you have got to be some level of crazy to think that in states like Texas, where we are, it's just not a winning strategy to go peeping into somebody's window. That is a loser every single day of the week. That is no good. So let's just hope that law and order will be served. Stop peeping. Hashtag stop peeping. Brett Woodable, News Talk 1110, 99.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
And 3WBT. It is the Brett Woodable Show. Hour number two now underway. 704-570-1110. Number to be a part of the conversation. Anthony Blinken and the Democrats doing exactly what you expect they would. They're blaming Trump for the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. Democrats on Monday emphatically defended President Biden's hasty military retreat from Afghanistan during a hearing at the committee. In fact, just in these last minutes, you have seen a confirmation from Tony Blinken. Get the Tony Blinken song ready, by the way, man. Lip service, because he is paying lip service. Tony Blinken confirms there are still Americans in Afghanistan who want to leave. Wait, they told us there were no more Americans who wanted to leave. What are they doing? Why are they changing this? Why are they doing this? This doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is really, really shocking. One of the reps who's on the committee, he's not there. He's at a virtual setup. Representative Albio Sires, Democrat from New Jersey Foreign Affairs Committee, He's literally doing his questioning from inside his closet. You can see his shirts and suits hanging behind him. He's literally in a closet, and it looks like there's underwear stacked up over here and socks. Katie Pavlich noting, come on, man. That background for a foreign affairs committee hearing? What? Those suits, I got those suits in London, man. That is foreign affairs. What's wrong with you? So this is just monster nonsense. It is monster nonsense. Is that up on our board? This is Tony Blinken answering some questions. Let's dive in.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Secretary, thank you for being here and spending this time. It's very important. You know, watching some of this debate, I think it's important to remind people. Yes, the Trump administration failed in the setup, and I think the Biden administration absolutely failed in the execution of this. I also want to make it clear, Mr. Secretary, we support the members of the State Department and their heroic action in the evacuation. I think the
Adam Kinzinger
point is they never should have been put in a place where they had to act heroically. We found ourselves many times, we talk about Bagram and leaving that, and I think that's important to point out. But there was also moments where the U.S. military, with the 6,000 people that we sent in, could have defended Kabul proper. It was clear that the Taliban were not intending to move into Kabul as early as they did. But we put them in a position where they had to act heroically. And we shouldn't ask that of our State Department employees, even though we appreciate that they did. I also think it's important to point out, you know, there's a lot of blame of the Afghan military. And I certainly, as a military man myself, wish that the Afghan military would have helped. But keep in mind, prior to that, there were assessments coming out that it was only a matter of time. Maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's a year, until the whole place collapsed. You know, we had built a military in our own image that relied on air power, that relied on logistics. And then we pulled our logistic and air power support from the Afghan military. And as they received night letters from the Taliban saying, we're going to kill your family because the United States is vacating, they're leaving you. It's to me, as much as I would love for them to have stayed and taken a stand heroically, I don't know many even of our allies' militaries that frankly could have stood in those conditions in that kind of an onslaught. Let me ask you, though, Mr. Secretary, you know, you talk a little about the Taliban legitimacy, and we're going to see how they act. I want to ask you a question, because I'm not sure where that changed. At the beginning of all of this, we were talking about building a worldwide coalition to not recognize the Taliban. And all of a sudden, this is on the table. Is the Taliban the legitimate government of Afghanistan?
Oh, here we go.
If not, would you consider what the Taliban have done in Afghanistan to be a coup d'etat?
First, let me just start by thanking you for your strong words in support of the men and women of the State Department. I very much appreciate
them. Oh, please.
Appreciate you saying them. Second, with regard to the Taliban and your question, it is the de facto government of Afghanistan. Those are just the facts. And
I don't mean to interrupt, but I need to. Is there has there been any discussion of an Afghan government in exile, vice president? Even if the president had left, is there any discussion of that? Because this, to me, appears to be an armed military coup against the legitimate elected government of Afghanistan.
Congressman, I will certainly look to see what the lawyers say. From where I sit, this is the product, alas, of one side getting the upper hand in a civil war.
Oh! Give me a break. That is absurd. That is absurd. Get rid of him. Well, ask what the lawyers. You want to know the fundamental problem with this entire administration? That answer that Anthony Blinken just gave him right now. Blinken should be singing cabaret, by the way. He should be singing in like a bar or an Applebee's or something, like someplace on a Friday night, an open mic night. I mean, he ought to be trying to seduce the ladies. And so that answer, I'll check the lawyers. Tony Blinken and the Blinkettes. Rip it, Tony. That's Tony Blinken. That's Abe Lincoln. That's your Secretary of State. That's the guy who's going to go take on the Taliban. Tony and the Taliban. Tony Blinken with a special guest appearance by Sirajuddin Haqqani. this weekend. This weekend at the Ha Ha Hut in Sharjah. Tony Blinken with a special guest appearance by the Afghan Taliban and, of course, Imran Khan from Pakistan. Dropkick Murphys next week. But this week, Tony Blinken, Stinkin' Blinken, debuting his brand new hit, Let Me Check the Lawyers. Gonna check the lawyers. Now you've done it, Sirajuddin Haqqani. Now you've done it, Mueller Baradar. We're going to bring in the $500 an hour boys from New York. You're going to get a good going over. This is horrible. This is embarrassing on so many levels. And this guy is taken seriously. And all he is he's get those wind-up teeth that you can buy at a joke store. Is there still a Spencer's? Does Spencer's still exist anymore? Get yourself some of those wind-up teeth and just ask the teeth questions. You're going to get better answers than Tony Blinken is. Tony Blinken's three favorite letters in the alphabet are YAC, but rearrange them in the right way. CYA. That's all he cares about. That is all he cares about is protecting his back end. He is a failure as a Secretary of State. But understand this if you understand nothing else. What this guy is, you look at this guy. We pay $52 billion a year to maintain the State Department. We ought to just fold it up. It's of no value. It is of no value at all. They hate the United States. Fundamentally, their orientation and allegiance is always to the countries that they're representing to rather than representing us. George Shultz told that very famous story back when he had people coming in to visit his Foggy Bottom. Well, Foggy Bottom's where in D.C. the State Department is. But he would say, come visit Foggy Bottom. And they would come up and he would spin the globe and he'd go, woo, and just like that it would sound. And he would say, okay, show me the country you represent. And they'd be like, oh, I'm from Lithuania. I'm from Latvia. I'm from Benin. I'm in Burkina Faso. No, you represent the United States of America to those places. You don't represent those places to us. They have embassies right here in Washington, D.C. But the orientation for people that are globalist in nature, like Tony Blinken, their orientation is always going to be America last, America last, America last. Honey, let's write a check. Disgraceful. Seton Motley comes by next. Wait till you hear this plan that Biden is hatching to bring back the subprime mortgage loans.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk, 1110-993 WBT. This is the Brett Winterbull Show. Happy to welcome to the show a good friend of mine. I haven't talked to him in a while. It's good to have him back. Seton Motley, everybody. Seton Motley, good to have you back.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm well. So you put up this piece last week, and I came across it. You're talking about what Biden wants to do with this new $3 trillion spending extravaganza, and you really frightened me with the idea that we're going to go back to radical leftism and possibly replicate the 2008 housing crisis by lending money to people who don't qualify to borrow money, Seton.
Yeah, they've been trying to recreate that since the 2008 housing crisis. The quick evolution of this is, of course, only one poor schmuck went to jail for the entire 2008 housing crisis. The government gave trillions of dollars to the banks. They then wrote Dodd-Frank, which killed thousands of small bank competitors to the big banks and made them 30% bigger. And now they've gone, and then almost immediately afterwards, they went back to the equity loans, mm-hmm. the racially diverse loans, whatever you want to, you know, whatever nonsense words they wanted to use, they're lending money to people who can't pay it back. Everybody knows can't pay it back, which is what got us in trouble in the first place, and they're doing it all over again. There's some Biden coming in. They cut a deal. Team Biden and the radical left cut a deal. Because Biden was the last tether to back when the Democrat Party was still somewhat functionally sane. So he could run as a moderate and as the guy that would calm the the savage tones of Donald Trump and all that. And the left ordinarily wouldn't back him, but they backed him in exchange for, once he's in office, we run the show. There's a lot of small groups out there that have been plotting and planning for, in some cases, 50 years, 60 years, and now it's like, you know, all hell's broken loose. They can put, they can implement whatever they want. There's a group called the National Consumer Law Center. There's another one called the Consumer for the Center for Responsible Lending, which of course means they're for the most irresponsible lending there is.
Right, right.
And this group, the CRL, Center for Responsible Lending, literally says on the in the first paragraph of their about us page, we want loans to be made not based on people's income.
Wow.
Well, that's fabulous. That's exactly what happened. You know, for anybody who saw The Big Short, which is a fabulous movie.
Absolutely.
One of the kinds of loans that they made were the acronym was NINJA.
Yes, right.
No income, no job, no you know, applicant.
Right.
And you could put your welfare payments as income to get a loan for a house.
And you could do stated income too. You could say, oh, yeah, you know, I make $847,000 a year.
Yeah,
you know.
Us. We'll put that down.
Yeah.
Yes. So. That's exactly what got us over the barrel in the first place, and that was the initial problem. Well, the initial problem, of course, was the Community Reinvestment Act of 1977,
right?
Passed by Democrats.
Barney Frank.
77, was he still there?
Yeah.
Way back then, okay. And what that did was they said you're being racist in not loaning to poor people who can't pay it back. So, and then, of course, like much of D.C., it was a bipartisan problem. Bush was awful at this. Every time a bank, any two banking entities wanted to merge, one of the requirements, the DOJ, Department of Justice requirements was, okay, we'll let you merge if you increase your number of red line loans. The red line being below this number,
right. We're
not going to lend to people. Well, they kept upping that number to 48, to 50%. So over half the loans on the books were to people that everybody knew couldn't pay them back.
Right.
And, you know, eventually that's what caught up to us. And then, of course, they became a nuclear bomb when they combined them all in mortgage-backed securities, which for 30 years were a good investment because, you know, you had to put 20% down on your mortgage.
Right.
And you had to, you know, you had reasonable people purchasing houses. Well, when you put a bunch of these poison pills into the mortgage-backed securities and then sell them all over the planet,
yeah, you crater
going upside down. The entire global economy collapses, and that's what happens.
Let me jump in here. Seton Motley
joining us here.
He's got a piece over at Red State. No, it's cool. Biden's sellout to radical leftism will replicate the 2008 housing crisis. I've got about 2 minutes left. They also want to do this with student loans, right? They want to blow up this student loan situation. Tell me about that.
Well, one of the things we don't remember is this is, and you know, some of us who remember this at the time predicted this is exactly what would happen, and now it's happening. They nationalized student loans in the Obamacare bill. It was originally put in the Obamacare bill as a pay for. Remember, they had to make it so it paid for itself. Well, one of the ways they did that was by nationalizing student loans. So the federal government, i.e. us, the taxpayers, took on that debt. And now they're saying, hey, it's $1.5 trillion. Let's cancel that debt.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's completely absurd because you're going to make a bunch of plumbers and electricians who never went to college pay for morons who went to college and got underwater basket weaving degrees.
Right.
And somehow can't find a paying career with those fabulous degrees that they got. So that's part of it too. And again, these two groups, NCLC and CRL, are pushing. They've been pushing this ever since they nationalized student loans and Obamacare. Student loan forgiveness, $1.5 trillion, just write it off.
It's unbelievable. 63% of student loan borrowers who made payments during COVID-19 still owe more now than they originally borrowed. One-third of the borrowers owe more than 125% of the original balance, despite the fact that no interest has been paid during the moratorium. This is a recipe for a disaster, because they're going to say, just tack it on. We're fine. It's modern monetary theory, and we don't have to worry about having to pay the bill when it comes due. It will come due. Seton Motley, great to have you on here, and I appreciate you checking in with us and giving us this tour.
Congratulations. I haven't spoken to you since you got the new gig in the new city. Congratulations.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show. Campus reform with this piece. I don't know what is going on over at Virginia Tech. Crystal Duncan Lane is an instructor in Virginia Tech's Department of Human Development and Family Science. This is an instructor who has apologized to students of racial minorities for being white. No, you heard me. You heard me correct. In her Who I Am section in her Human Development 1134 syllabus, she wanted to speak on her experience with racism. So she's a human development and family science instructor at Virginia Tech. She apologized to her students for her whiteness and encouraged white students to join her on the journey of confronting inherent biases. She started with an extensive description of her demographics. I am a Caucasian, cisgender female, and first generation college student from Appalachia who is of Scottish, British, and Norwegian heritage. I am married to a cisgender male, and we are middle class. While I did not, quote, ask for the many privileges in my life, I have benefited from them and will continue to benefit from them, whether I like it or not. This is injustice. I am and will continue to work on a daily basis to be anti-racist and confront the innate racism within myself that is in reality and history of white people. I want to be better every day. I will transform every day. This work terrifies me. Every day, I invite my white students to join me on this journey. And to my students of color, I apologize for the inexcusable horrors within our shared history. Wow. I got a problem with what she said. Why are you using possessive? Your students of... Why are you using a possessive about people? You need to re-examine that. So, this is the future of what education is going to look like. This stuff that you're seeing at the local level with CRT and things like that, that's the tip of the iceberg. That is absolutely the tip of the iceberg. This has become industrialized at the collegiate and university level. And it's because, and I hate to say this, because I'm a graduate of a college. I went to college. It's because you can literally teach anything in a college classroom. If it's outside, say, the business school or the hard sciences, or mathematics, right? Anything you teach, you could teach anything you want, and they can figure out how to put it under the subhead of political science, international relations, education. You can put anything you want under those umbrellas. You can't really put it under the umbrella of mathematics. You can't really, and I'm not saying that there are not crazy pinko leftist, wacko, Unabomber types in the sciences, there were. I mean, we saw the Unabomber, right? And he was a scientist. He was a brilliant mathematician who totally went, you know, went sideways and committed crimes and murdered people by his own admission. But you can get away with selling all kinds of garbage in a college and a university and charge an outrageous amount of money. You can't do that. See, there's no way to do that if you go to a trade, right? If you say, how do I wire this house? How do I put in wiring in this house? How do I set it up? What's the length I need? What's the voltage? What's the amperes? What's all that kind of stuff that we've got going on? Oh, so you want to talk about wiring? Is the wiring for somebody who is cisgender or identifies as transgender? Wait, hold on. What are you talking about? Well, I mean, the person living in the house, do they have equity or do they not have equity? Well, I don't know. I think it's a new house. I don't think anybody's owned it yet. No. We don't mean equity like real estate equity. I mean, we need to do an equitable version of a new main sewer line to come into the house. We need to, it's crazy. We're supposed to build a garage, but we got to do it in a social justice style of building a garage. What does that mean? Well, see, you're not going to do that in the trades. Not going to do that in the trades. But when you go into humanities, right? The humanities, you go into the generalist stuff that you learn in a liberal arts college. You could teach whatever you want and say that it's that. 100% you can. And you can charge confiscatory rates for those classes, and you can make these kids sign up and take student loans and come out owing $200,000, and they have no ability to get a job that's even going to pay them a quarter of that because you filled their heads full of nonsense. So who are the people that end up getting celebrated? People who decide to become professional students. And by that, I mean people who stay in the school, stay in the program, get the master's, layer on more debt. They get into the PhD program. They layer on more debt. They learn how to parrot the talking points and the talking lines of those who have the PhD program that they're running. And then once they've put you through all that and you've spent like $300,000 in pursuit of a PhD in some soft humanities thing, then guess what ends up happening? Then they'll let you in, but only if you have the right political proclivities. Then they'll let you in. That's it. Look at Harvard University. Look at Princeton. Look at Yale. Look at Stanford. Look at these universities and ask them, why do you have such impossibly high standards? Why are you exclusive and excluding so many who could get an education with you? You have multi-billion dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in endowment money. Why are you not opening the doors wide for opportunity for the downtrodden, for those who haven't had the opportunity, for those who are first generation or second generation or any of that kind of stuff? We are living in the era of virtual education, folks. Why can't you admit a class of 6,000 into Harvard or into Yale and make sure that you're bringing in people from the community that are underserved? And do you know what the answer to that question is? It's very simple. Because they're elite. If they're elite and they let everybody in, then they're not elite anymore. Because when you go to a Harvard or a Yale or a Stanford or any of these universities, what you're paying for is the connections. You're paying for the branding. You're paying for the certificate that says you went to Harvard or you went to Yale or you went to, and you spent the requisite money to pledge that fraternity that is Harvard. And then they say to you, okay, you've dropped $175,000. You ever wonder why nobody really ever flunks out of Harvard or Yale? Ask a Harvard or a Yale student. You don't flunk out, because if you flunk out, you taint the pool. That's Steve. He's a failure. Really? He's a failure? Yeah, but he went to Yale. Son of a gun. It's got the magic four-letter name. Yale. How about that?
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110 993 WBT. All right, let me jump out and grab a couple phone calls here. We've been patiently holding on here. Or they've been patiently holding on here. Stan is up first. Stan, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
All right, Brett, I'm going to tell you what this is about.
Okay.
This is all designed to make you feel guilty so that you will give the government control of your money.
You're talking about the political correctness in the college and all that?
No, none of this is about anything more than what they're saying it's about. All the like I'm going to tell you, any wealthy liberal tonight, mm-hmm. if somebody broke in their home, mm-hmm. they would call the police. What they wouldn't do is they wouldn't say, hey, what is your need to have what you're taking from my home greater than my need to keep it? If not, you can have it. Hell no, they ain't going to do that.
They will not do that. That's correct.
They will not do that. And the problem is social welfare is based on that model, morally. The progressive income tax is based on that. Medicaid's based on that. And Obamacare is based on that. And until this country can have enough guts to send that morality straight to hell where it came from, mm-hmm. this country can't get any better.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up Obamacare. And I was thinking about the attacks that went after Sarah Palin when she was trying to warn people about death panels. Remember that back in the uh-huh. Obamacare debate? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, Zeke Emanuel, the people that were inside the Obama team, they were vowing, there's not going to be death panels. There's not going to be any of that. We're not going to ration medical care. We're not going to do any of that stuff. But isn't it funny that now with this explosion of COVID cases, you are getting this narrative reemerging from the people who are out there on the left saying, well, just don't treat anybody who's got COVID who didn't get the shot. Don't give them heart attack care. That was what Jimmy Kimmel said last week. Don't give them. So they kind of still believe it. It just took them a lot longer to come out and reveal that. But
all this is headed that if you don't support the party, you can't participate.
Well, that's and right, and that is classical Marxist socialism, right? I mean, you must be in the party, or you don't get your food ration, you don't get your education, you don't get the job you want, you don't get any of that kind of stuff. Right? Mao's Great Leap Forward, you don't get any of that if you're not punching the right buttons.
Like with Joe Biden, what he just did with the vaccine mandates, all the government employees, except for the postal service.
That's right. Because some good animal house, I mean, animal farm, right? More some animals are more equal than other animals. And that's really what we're looking at here. But here's the problem. The conservatives, the Republicans have got to have a better counter argument. Like, for example, here's what I would say. I'd say we're going to go to a consumption tax, no more income tax. We're going to go to a consumption tax. And what you're going to do is we're going to phase it in from the lowest income to the highest income. Okay, so for the next 3 or 4 years, the wealthy folks are still going to be paying their income tax. We're going to phase it in across the lower income levels, and we're going to show that the government is going to take in more money because it's going to be proceeds off of receipts on stuff that was spent. We built the entire country out of the box going on tariffs and that very sort of measure. We didn't have an income tax until the mid-19th century. And so... Yeah. So what we need to do is we need to empower people in a different way. We're never going to out-socialist the left, but we can out-empower the left by giving people more control over their money.
That's correct.
And that's what's got to be sold, and that's not what's going to be sold. We're going to try to make the argument that philosophically, according to the founders, you shouldn't have this or that. No, the argument should be, how do we put more money and opportunity in your pocket? You decide where you want to send your kids to school. Why does the local failing elementary school get to keep your kids just because they're the government school? Heck no. That's what has to be offered up. You have to offer up a counter message that is specific and targeted to the things that people want.
Right, and hopefully people have seen how bad this is going to suck at some point,
mm-hmm.
that they'll actually figure it out and go vote no on all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Stan, but let's see. Here's Jim. Jim is calling us. He's in San Diego, wants to talk about the recall. You want to talk about the example of the place you don't want to become? It's California. Jim, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Brent. Welcome you back from a solemn remembrance weekend.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, already they're showing irregularities in the count.
Yes.
Rancho, California, some people went in to cast their vote. They went into the polling booth. And immediately, as they pulled up their name, they said, you've already voted. And they said, no, I didn't. They found them all over the Rancho, California area. So
yeah. Well, you know what? I've gotten two ballots here. I have a very dear family friend who has had ballots go to Israel with their relatives who had left the state of California years ago. Gavin Newsom is shooting ballots out at anybody who's ever lived anywhere near the state of California, because I think he understands what's really happening now, and they have to steal this to prevent the recall of Gavin Newsom. And now, you know, you're going to have President Biden's coming on in. He's coming on in this afternoon. He's going to go to Long Beach and try to do a rally for Gavin Newsom. If Gavin Newsom ends up getting turned out like he should, that's got to give Democrats super pause on the federal level.
Yeah, he's going to be heckled. There are a lot of people working down in the Long Beach area that have been subjected to his administration's, their...
Oh, yeah, the lockdowns and the controls. Absolutely. Look, tomorrow's the day, and late tomorrow night, we'll have an idea, probably early the next morning, and then they'll find more ballots in the trunk of a car, and we all know what's going to be happening, right? It's going to be Katie barred the door. But socialists don't give up easily. And even when you want to vote them out, sometimes you don't really get a chance to vote them out. And that's the frustrating reality of things. All right, that's another hour down and another great one straight ahead. Don't go anywhere. News talk.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com. And talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
1110.93 WBT, it is the Brett Winterbull Show, and we are tracking a whole bunch of big stories that are moving. One of the biggest stories continues to be, sadly, the epidemic of violence in our communities. And this horribly sad story coming out of Salisbury. Police investigating after they said a 14-year-old boy was shot to death over the weekend while playing video games inside a Salisbury home. Investigators told, this is reporting out of Channel 9, that shortly before 5 p.m. on Sunday, a group of juveniles were in the basement of the home on Maple Avenue playing video games. A gun, which detectives learned had been stolen from somewhere else, was being passed around between the group, and the weapon accidentally fired, hitting the 14-year-old victim. The teen, who was a student at Salisbury High School, was rushed to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. His name has not been released, and police have not said how old the others involved were. No other details have been released. Due to the sensitivity of the death, local schools were placed on lockdown on Monday as a precaution. This comes on the heels of this report that a second man had been charged, as you heard from Mark Garrison, in connection with a drive-by shooting late Tuesday night that left a 3-year-old boy dead in Northwest Charlotte. Jacob Lanier has been charged with murder, 8 counts of attempted murder, 9 counts of shooting into an occupied dwelling, and conspiracy to commit murder. Earlier, Quatonio Stevens, 21, was charged with accessory after the fact in connection with the murder of the young 3-year-old boy, Asia Ficaro. And had a reporter there in the court on Friday after Stevens made their first appearance. So you have two young men who are facing very serious charges. But we know from the video it was more than two that we're firing. We wait to see what is going to end up happening here. The fact is, if you want to win elections, if you want to win the support of people, if you want to be a leader, you don't have to go and figure out how to lead 10,000 miles away over in Afghanistan. Okay? There are crises aplenty right here at home. And how you want to define home? As your community, your town, your city, your state, your country. There are plenty of crises that need our attention right here at home. And if, and only if, you come up with a smart, good, constitutional approach and plan to fix these crises, will you then start to attract the support of other people? We are living in an era now in 2021, where we're now into the third year of COVID, because it started in 19, went into 20, and now we're into 21, heading towards 2022. So 3-4 years of this has already been underway. Americans understand the games that the people in Washington, D.C. are playing. And people in Charlotte are aware of the games that are played in Raleigh. People in South Carolina are aware of the games that are played in Columbia. This is a new paradigm. This is a paradigm shift that we're watching. And typical politicians will overcomplicate everything. They're going to try to make it as complex and complicated as they possibly can, because it's going to require a professional political class to fix these problems. Really, I don't think it takes a professional political class to fix the problems. I think it takes will. I think it takes ideas and will and commitment to fix the problem. How do you stop people from feeling unsafe in their community? It's not hard. It's not rocket science. I have news for you. It's not by defunding the police. It's not by defunding the police. It's not by instituting CRT curricula. It's not by any of that stuff. The way you make people feel safe is you create a safe environment for people. It can be done, but it takes work. You can make people feel safer. You know how you do it? You watch bad guys get arrested and prosecuted when they mug the old lady, do a drive-by, rob a store, shoplift from a store. When they break and enter and you catch them, that is how you make people feel more safe. Aha, my phone call is important to this department, to this agency. I am calling for service. They are responding with service. They are taking the complaint. They are taking the complaint seriously, and they are showing a good effect. America has gotten richer and richer and richer. Don't tell me poverty causes crime. Poverty does not cause crime. There are plenty of people who are poor that don't rob other people. You know what causes crime? Greed and a lack of respect and a lack of understanding that you have a right to your property. You have a right to your car. You have a right to your house. You have a right to your things. And somebody, whether they're local, whether they're international, whatever it is, they don't have the right to take your stuff against your will. And they ought not be rewarded by gutless politicians, prosecutors, you name it, who don't want to take the stand against people hitting old ladies over the head or doing drive-bys into a house. Like, I can't believe, if you think about this, how hard is it to understand that you don't shoot guns into a house and kill a 3-year-old boy? Where's the march? Has there been a march or a mural yet? And I'm serious. Has there? Has there been? Has there been any kind of a vigil? Has there been a recommitment by people to say, this is enough. Enough is enough is enough. This stops. And I don't care what community it's happening in. We are all part of this. Because a person can go shoot up a house in one town or one neighborhood, and they can go and commit another crime in another place. So it behooves all of us to reduce crime. But this is where the professional politicians come up short. For 20 years, they couldn't do Afghanistan, right? They couldn't fix Afghanistan for 20 years, but they're the professionals. For 20 years, you can't handle these challenges. Well, no, you can handle them. You just didn't handle them. The politicians are out to get reelected and to put quotes in the newspaper. And they're out there to look like they're doing something. Don't do something. Do the right and proper thing that needs to be fixed.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Bo Thompson joins us at this time each and every one of these days. It's good to have you back, Bo Thompson. Good to catch up with you.
Always. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday for you, my friend. A couple of pieces I want to pick up from across the weekend, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But let me start with this. Joe Biden, President Biden, is in California right now. He's going to make a big appeal for Gavin Newsom there in Long Beach, California. It's going to be about like 10 o'clock Eastern or so when he does this rally out there on the West Coast. Do you think Biden will have any kind of an impact on this thing? And if he ends up if Newsom ends up getting recalled, does that damage the president's brand any, even more?
I was thinking about this because we talk so much about the Trump effect, and
right.
Is there still a Trump effect, or has it been, is it as big a deal as it used to be? And we've seen a couple of instances where, since he's left office, where, and notably Georgia, but in other instances as well, about how much that influence is still a thing or not. And now you see it on the other side of the aisle, and it's not just Biden, it's the ticket, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. This is Kamala Harris's state, so the two of them combining forces together, I think that's going to be a very interesting, maybe even symbolic idea of where this Democratic Party and ticket is headed. I mean, I was talking this morning to Mick Mulvaney about Biden over the weekend, September 11th, and the fact that he did not speak on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
His vice president did. You know, we know that former President Bush did. But I thought that was interesting because, to me, that's a no-brainer that the president would speak on a day like that. But he didn't, and you can talk all about the reasons why he did not and whether people in his party wanted him to. But I think this is a big deal just as an idea of where the Democratic Party is headed, 2022/24.
I mean, because let's be honest, just based on bleeding population, which is what has happened in the state of California for a long time, you do have fewer conservatives there in the state. They have left. They've departed.
Right.
And so the law of averages says you would think Newsom would end up prevailing. But I mean, this is one of those cupcake matchups on a Saturday afternoon, right, where you've got a powerhouse team taking on whoever, and you're expecting that they're going to steamroll them. What if they end up with a Hail Mary at the end and you lose? I mean, Biden would be, I think it would be really bad for him to take that L in such friendly territory for him.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
You know the area better than just about anybody around these parts. I mean, the very fact that we're speculating as
yes.
whether or not it's not a slam dunk, I mean, isn't right. that saying something in of itself?
It does. It does. And I think the one thing I would say to people who haven't spent any kind of length of time in California, this is not the OC. This is not Beverly Hills 90210. Southern California especially is filled with seething people. There are a lot of angry people there that are angry at taxes and all kinds of other stuff. It's really quite something. So we'll watch and see what happens. One of the issues that I'm curious about, and we saw this horrible case last week with the 3-year-old losing his life in his own home, shot at 150 times into the residence. We've seen now two arrests made, one late on Friday, one was announced earlier this morning with perpetrators and people connected to this case. Have people sort of forgotten the importance of the messaging when it comes to public safety? I think public safety is a moving issue, meaning I think it moves the needle. I think it moves voters. But it feels like we just kind of take it for granted that we're an increasingly violent society, whether it's Chicago or Charlotte or LA or any place else. And I think that this needs to start to take shape as a driving issue in the upcoming elections, be they local, municipal, be they state, be they the congressionals. What say you, Bo?
Well, I think Charlotte's a big enough city that if it doesn't happen in your neighborhood, there's a degree of desensitization to it, kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way that that kids play video games or watch movies. If it doesn't happen on your block, then there's a degree of isolation between everyday people and the actual crime itself, if they're not directly involved in it. But by the, on the flip side of that, I was talking to Jensen today about the fact that the high school connections to this, and the fact that they had to be on modified lockdown several of these schools last week, and the Friday night, heightened security at some of these football games. You know, when it starts affecting areas like that and affecting more people about their, not necessarily directly connected to the crime, but feeling the effects of how it's affecting their normal routine, then perhaps the pendulum starts swinging in the other direction a little bit. But Charlotte's a big enough city where if it's not happening on your block or in your neighborhood or in your circle of dealings, then it can seem like it's in another state almost.
Yeah, I totally get that. And it's a shame because I think it ought to be it ought to be something that's focused for all of us, for everybody, because public safety is a massively important point. It's not about safeties. It's about quarterbacks. Very, very ham-handed pivot for me. But the Washington football team placed the quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick on injured reserve. It remains uncertain whether it'll be a long or a short stay. They're now saying 6 to 8 weeks. Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be out, replaced by Taylor Heinicke, who'll start Thursday's game against the Gents. So here's the question. Is it possible? Can you see a universe in which Cam gets in his car and heads on up to DC to reunite with Ron?
Well, I mean, it's the easiest headline in the NFL today, right? I mean, Cam is out of a job. The one coach in the league that needs a quarterback right now used to be Cam's coach when Cam was in MVP form. The odd thing about this is, who in their right mind would have ever thought, I mean, even at the beginning of training camp this season, that you'd have one franchise that has Will Greer as a backup.
Right.
You'd have another franchise that has Taylor Heinicke as a backup.
Right.
And yet Cam can't get through the door in either place, it would seem. I don't know. I mean, I listened to Stephen A. Smith on ESPN today basically say that if Cam doesn't get hired in Washington for this gig, then he's done.
Yeah.
And he says, while he doesn't think that there are 32 quarterbacks better than Cam, the league does, and it should be basically the writing on the wall for him. You know, and also to say, if Ron Rivera is not going to hire you in this situation, then come on. And I don't know. I can see why it makes sense to try. I can also see that Ron Rivera's had several chances at Cam, and knowing him as well as he does, still hasn't bitten on that, so that should say something. So I don't know. I mean, on one hand, yeah, it seems like a no-brainer. On the other hand, it seems like a no-brainer that they don't do it.
Who's coming up on the Bo Thompson Show tomorrow morning?
Got Brett. today was Brett. Brett Jensen was with me today, and so were you, obviously. We have the Brett Winterbull Crossing the Streams. We also have Beth Troutman in on a Tuesday like normal, and we'll follow up on many of these stories you and I have been talking about. Of course, the Anthony Blinken testifying on Capitol Hill today, or at least from afar. He was down the street, I understand.
Yes.
but still, we'll talk about that tomorrow and everything else on your busy Tuesday morning.
As Bart Scott famously said, can't wait.
That's right.
All right, well, have a great night, man.
You too, man.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Take care. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, and it is good to be here with you. 704-570-1110. All right, I hate to break this to you, but they want to destroy your earning power. CNBC just produced the first analysis of what the Democrats' new tax proposal will do to the overall tax rate of the wealthiest class of taxpayers, right? Top earners in New York City, I know we don't care about this, but we should care about this because every place people get stuck with high taxes, eventually it has an effect in a lot of other places. Top earners in New York City would face a combined city, state, and federal income tax rate of 61%. That is the rate that taxpayers pay on every dollar of earned income above a threshold. The threshold would be 46.6%. No outfit, no government, no city, no state combined ought to have more than 33% on your earnings, as far as I'm concerned. I think it is unethical. I think it is theft. The plan focuses on trying to lower taxes for small businesses, in addition to an increase in the corporate tax rate of 26.5%. Democrats also want to impose a 3% wealth surtax on taxpayers with income above $5 million or in excess of $2.5 million for a married individual filing separately, while increasing the top capital gains rate to 25%. Democrats are also calling for a top personal income tax rate of 39.6%. The Democrats think, I want you to think about your paycheck. They think they are entitled to 40% of your paycheck. Is that the case? As Republicans and moderate Democrats express resistance to the $3.5 trillion figure in Biden's budget plan, odds of a major hike have fallen, while the market's expectation for a modest hike in corporate taxes and in taxes for the wealthy have emerged. And while there are plenty of other factors to blame for the recent market turbulence, tax hikes are certainly looming on the horizon with Democrats in control of both houses of Congress. This is bad news. I mean, no matter how you slice this, this is bad news, because you no longer have Washington, D.C. being fearful of a rebuke at the ballot box. Why? Because they're going to try to ram through the nationalized voting bill that's going to prevent you from being able to hold these people to account. You see what they're doing, right? They're trying to pack the court. They want to add three more Supreme Court justices. They want to nationalize voting. They want to push through all these schemes. And then at the same time, they want to confiscate more of your money. Does Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer stay up late at night when you've got to prepare for a presentation in the morning? Do they travel with you and make sure your hotel is all set up when you have to travel out of town on a business meeting? Do they keep your kids at home so you can go in for an early meeting or a late night client dinner? Does government do any of that for you? Does Mandy do that for you? Does Gibby or Dina do that for you? Does Governor Cooper do that for you? Do any of these politicians that tell you every 2, 4, and 6 years that they're going to fight for you, are they ever there when you need them? Hell no. They think you're a filthy, unvaccinated mess, and they support the president's plan to jab every single one of you and label you a bunch of insurrectionists if you refuse to take the jab. I mean, let's be honest. These are people who, they don't want to fight for you. Let's be honest about what people in Washington, D.C. want to do. They don't want to fight for you. They want to fight you at every step of the way. Pelosi's a billionaire. Chuck Schumer's done very, very well for himself. By the way, went to Harvard. You look at these people in Washington, D.C., in the Congress and in the Senate. These are the wealthiest of the wealthy, the most powerful of the powerful. They are the smartest, best people ever. And the minute they get elected and inaugurated into their positions of power, be they senators, congressmen, be they vice presidents or president, they are set for life because of the connections they now have. If you're short money, you got to figure out, hey, I'm going to pay half the electric bill and half the rent bill. They don't have to think about that. They don't have to think about that ever. They don't have to worry about whether or not they can get shoes for their kids. They don't have those worries. Those are regular people worries. Those are striver worries. Those are the worries that we, the suckers, have. They don't. They pick up the phone. They get an answer. They need more money. They shake down a donor. They got it made. Who's got your back? You want to know the answer? Your friends do. Your family does. I do. And I'm not going to ask you for a vote, and I'm not going to ask you for money.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
By request from TJ. It's your ringtone this week, right? No, stop. Stop. That's Pat Boone, right? That's Pat Boone doing You Got Another Thing Coming by Judas Priest. Oh, my gosh. I know they're in town. Sherry wanted to go to the show, but it's a work night. It's a school night. You know, you can't go to Priest. You can't go when you want to go. That's the problem. 704-570-1110. I want to grab this call real quick. Tara, welcome to the program. How are you? What's on your mind?
Hey, good. Just real quick. I find that the president couldn't speak on 9/11.
Yep.
But he can go to California.
Yes.
And find a way to help Gabby Newsom speak. And this is pun intended. Mm. Somewhat of a cop-out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Yeah. That's right, Tara. You nailed it in that one. Here's the thing. He made a video that they released on September 11th. He didn't speak live. You're correct in that regard. In fact, see if you have this clip, TJ. This is cut six. Cut six? Okay. Cut six. This is Joe Biden speaking on September 11th by video. Go.
Unity is what makes us who we are. America at its best. To me, that's the central lesson of September 11th.
So unity is the central lesson of September 11th. Okay, I'll take the president at his word. I don't agree with him, but I'll take him at his word. That the central lesson of September 11th is unity. Sammamish Washington High School banned students from wearing red, white, and blue for its Patriots Day football game on Friday over concerns that a memorial and kids wearing red, white, and blue could be, quote, racially insensitive and offensive to some individuals. Red, white, and blue is offensive to individuals. Red, white, and blue Friday, the Instagram announcement reportedly read, but has since been removed. Dress in your USA best. Students wanted to do something to remember the tragic events. This is all per Jason Rantz out of Washington State. His show obtained an email that revealed the school's principal said wearing the colors of the American flag could unintentionally cause offense to some who see it differently. Who see what differently? See red, white, and blue differently? How do they see red, white, and blue? The red, white, and blue themed event was canceled abruptly, and students were told about the decision Friday during morning announcements. Quote, at this point, I was fairly upset and confused as to why the theme was changed, and I went around asking students in our leadership, a student told Jason. They had explained that red, white, and blue was going to be seen as racially insensitive and may affect people in a way that we will not understand, and for that reason, we had to change it. So nobody was actually offended. There was the risk of becoming offended. There was the possibility somebody might raise an eyebrow. So to preemptively avoid the raised eyebrow or the look of concern, we just cancel everything else for everybody else. That's incredible power. That we are three steps removed from Caesar standing in the Colosseum and deciding whether or not the gladiator lives or dies by putting the thumb up or the thumb down. That is incredible power that the left has been able to aggregate. We don't have anybody that was actually offended. There was the risk of being offended. And because of the risk of being offended, we have to immediately not even potentially offend. Eastlake High School students were not yet born when terrorists brought down the World Trade Center in New York City, attacked the Pentagon, and brought down United Flight 93 in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. But their lives and the lives of every American were changed forever. Having a sense of history, sometimes lost on young Americans, there was a student-led movement to honor those lost during the worst terrorist attack in history. Students would then show their pride by wearing red, white, and blue. A mother of one student reportedly was stunned by the response she got from the principal, a guy named Chris Bede. Or Beatty, to her question about the cancellation of the event. Our leadership teachers made this decision and explained it to students, Beatty reportedly wrote to her. I know tomorrow is 9/11 and understand the sacrifice and values our flag represents, but I think they just did not want to unintentionally cause offense to some who see it differently. That's stupid. Who came out and said they saw it differently? Like, who did that? Who said that? Who? Some speculated about whether or not the opposing team had objected to the Patriots Day event at the game, but Rance said a photo that his show received depicted that the Rainier Reach team had few fans in the stands. On a parent's Facebook page, some reportedly expressed outrage about the decision and speculated the event's cancellation could have been over race or something like that. This is the red, white, and blue of the American flag belongs to everybody. You know what? Here's something that's incredible. You actually could not be American, and you could be like living in Barbados, and you could fly an American flag, and you could wear American flag colors. You could wear an American flag on your shirt. They're readily available. You could just buy them anywhere you want. You know, pick your location. There's nothing exclusive about the American flag. It represents the ideals, and I think it shows solidarity with what happened on September the 11th. But Joe Biden gets it totally wrong. The answer to the question of what 9/11 means, it doesn't mean unity. Unity may have been a byproduct after we suffered a terrible attack. But the message of September the 11th, 2001, has got to be, as it was on that day, vigilance, preparedness, and a willingness to defend our nation against enemies, foreign and domestic. That's the message. The message is there are people who want to do grave harm to the American people and to our allies, and we must be ever vigilant to prevent them or respond to them when they try to do that. It's not unity. It's strength. Thanks to TJ and Josh and Boomer and Mark Garrison, Brett Jensen, and Bo Thompson. We'll do it again tomorrow starting at 3. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Panthers Talk's up next.